Welcome back. I'm Juliette Tlevy. You're watching Stockwatch and joining me in studio this evening to tackle your questions are Gerbrand Smits from NEFG Fund Management and Paul Chakaduka from GT247.com. If you'd like to send those questions to us, please do. You can text Stock in the question to 41392. You can email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or you can tweet us at Business Day TV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Gerbrand, Paul, nice to see you both this evening. Yeah. Paul, if I may start with you, not a bad finish for the JSE, up a fifth of a percent, so at least we scraped ourselves into the green. But the financials had a terrible day, and there were a couple of big financials out with the results, Absa Group, Old Mutual. Why did it take, well, both companies take such a knock from the market?
Oh, well, I think with Absa, I think they, when they released the results today, firstly, I think they clearly indicated to the market that, you know, last year was a pretty difficult time for them, and especially with Barclays transaction unwind. And I think also at the same time, I think the forecast going forward isn't as what the market would have anticipated. Although Absa themselves believe that, you know, their earnings for 2019 will be much better than what we had last year. I think, you know, what we've clearly seen from the numbers is although Barclays was a very tight ship, you know, Absa has gone off and tried to increase a lot of the lending book, and they've also, to a certain degree, reclaim some lost ground in the retail banking business division. But like I've always said in previous shows, for me, this is one of the banks I really don't like. I think it's a big giant that definitely struggles to move around and to make a decent money like the likes of First Rand or even, I think, a better comparison, Standard Bank. And then Old Mutual, first set of results after the spin-off, and I think this is the first time seeing them as a standalone entity. Again, also I think 12% lower from market expectation, and also lower than what management had set out to produce.
Yeah, I mean, I felt firstly reading Old Mutual results, it sort of made me think of a long form poem or some sort of or War and Peace, actually, because they kept going on again about delivering against the eight battlegrounds, and I just thought, oh, this is turgid stuff, you know, like set it out clearly. So, you know, your tension switches off halfway through, and it really is a grind to get through. That's the first thing. So on Old Mutual. And on Absa, I suppose you could say, the dead hand of, I mean, you say Barclays ran a tight ship, but you can also accuse it of being a dead hand on the business, sort of constraining Absa from ever going out and doing their own thing, taking a little bit more risk than maybe they would have if they didn't have Barclays as the major shareholder. They can't use that excuse anymore, Gerbrand. And, you know, I suppose now it's the true test for whether Absa can be the bank that people want to invest in, and it doesn't seem on the basis of these results that it is yet there.
Yeah, look, the banking world's funny. I mean, a few years back, 15 odd years back, Nedbank almost folded, and after that they were like the best performer on the stock exchange. And it's funny, then you had First Rand struggling for quite some time, and over the last decade you had First Rand being the awesome bank out there. At the moment it looks like Standard Bank and Nedbank is stealing that show when earnings are coming out. Of the earnings just released, we're still waiting for First Rand.
Yeah.
Had a bit of a trading update. Like to see some more clarity when their numbers do come out. But I think, you know, there's a lot of that happening at Absa at the moment. I like the African exposure, that's almost 20%. I think so they went the difficult part of investing into Africa with Standard Bank, more capital intensive, both of them. And I think long-term wise, Africa will come right again, and that should bear fruit for them. 5 years back, it was a hot topic. Everybody's running there, and you were being paid lofty valuations for them. Yeah. They're cheap now. We know they didn't deliver for 10 years. They got new management in now. Maybe it's a time to look at them again. We never owned them, but we do now.
Okay, so you and Paul are diametrically opposed in this point.
Yeah, I think if you look at the African venture, if Standard Bank's example is anything to go by, the African venture has really been essentially a loss-making enterprise for them. Although if you've got a very long-term view on it, maybe ultimately it does then pay off. But I think that the dynamics within the African environment are changing, and I think South Africa has been very, very slow, or South African banks have been really slow to adapt to the needs in Africa, especially in East and West Africa.
Okay, so worth a punt, Gerbrand, in your view, and Old Mutual, I mean, Old Mutual was supposed to create a whole bunch of value in this managed separation and the unbundling, etc., has yet to materialize.
I think it's a bit early, in my opinion. And this is a business I really like, and I like what they are aspiring to do, although you have criticized their 8 battlefields. But I think, what we've seen with a lot of businesses in the last couple of months is that they've had to really go back to that proverbial drawing board and say to themselves, what do we need to do? What have we done wrong? And what's the next?
And what are we, maybe?
Exactly, re-identifying themselves. But I think they've been able, number one, to get through the whole unwind, and now what they are in a position to do, obviously listed in all those 5 different exchanges, but you're getting strong flows out of domestically in Zimbabwe and in Malawi. So I think those 3 markets will remain key for Old Mutual. But they need to now really expand their business and then again retarget certain markets to improve their profitability.
Yeah. Gerbrand, just the last word on Old Mutual. Does it excite you at all?
Yeah, we think from a cash flow point of view, it's probably the cheapest one out there against the insurers. We saw all the insurers that came out so far. Look, they got a pool of money that they manage, and those do go down with markets up and down as well. So most of these impairments and bad performances on all of the life insurers so far had to do with some market movements over 2018. So I think similar with a mutual, maybe a little bit light on the numbers that came in. Maybe they took their eye a little bit off the operations when doing their 8 battlegrounds, as you said. But they had lots on their plate over the last year. If they can now start focusing operationally again, pick it up a little bit, we like it from a cash flow point of view.
Yeah, I'm just picturing Peter Moyo in a suit of armor on a horse. Probably not the image he wants to resonate with any of us. What about Aspen? Aspen was Friday's horror show. It did recover somewhat, but then it was under pressure again today. And the question is, for someone with a 5-year-plus time horizon, is Aspen a buying opportunity at current levels? Do the panel believe that in time things can turn around for them, or is it simply too risky to get involved in? And is that the question that everyone is trying to weigh up now?
Yeah, it's a difficult one. Huh? I've actually punted it at 140 the other day on the show, so we thought that the transaction.
You must have been the person supporting it when it got to 71 Rand, Gerbrand.
So we thought that the transaction would probably be done and that the debt would look a little bit better when they brought out their numbers. So I think a disappointment for everyone out there. I still back them. I think, there's still like 8 Rand almost on the table on an earnings per share basis or headline earnings per share basis. The cash flow didn't look well. If they can pick that up and they can do that transaction, get debt down, I think they can do it. I mean, Stephen Sart and Mr. Attridge, I mean, they've been in the game for quite some time. We all like to share at 450. We avoided it, but we even like it more. It's now 100 Rand. It was 140 when I recommended it the previous time.
Yeah.
It was it's not a nice thing out there to be any company with any debt on your balance sheet. They do have a lot. But it's not the worst businesses.
Paul, I mean, what do you think? Because so Gerbrand mentions that you've got Gus Attridge and Stephen Saad who've been there from the get-go, entrepreneurs. They're the ones who grew this business. But are you at a point in Aspen's life where you're almost not the appropriate people in a way? If you're Stephen Saad, you're the visionary and you're the one who does the deals. But now you almost need a functionary who can cut the debt and do you have the right management in charge? Absolutely taking nothing away from Aspen management.
Now, I think in this, if you read or listen to the statements they made last week, I think they're speaking to exactly that. They're speaking about readdressing the balance sheet, readdressing the debt position. And at the same time, they're saying to themselves, okay, fine, we've got these assets, some of them which are maybe not necessarily core to what they're doing anymore, and we can hopefully get rid of them at decent prices. And by doing so, you know, you're able to, you know, bring back some cash onto the balance sheet and pay down some of that debt. But, you know, you're very right, and I think in that maybe these guys are blinkered, or maybe there might be a bit, you know, some emotional attachment to them. But I think these are still the key guys in this business. And already from the statements they put out, I think they're right on the money, and I believe they're going to be able to turn this business around.
Okay, so you both back Aspen for a five-year view. Okay, let's talk in 5 years out, shall we? What about talking about the horror show of the JSE? So I mean, Aspen was catastrophic on Friday. EOH has been a bit of a disaster. What are your expectations for the interim results coming out in a couple of weeks' time? Would you rather just see what happens with the interim results? I'm not sure if the question is if you expect the results to be bad or what you expect to happen to the share price. Probably the latter.
You know, I think with a lot of these businesses that have been under the spotlight, for example, if you look at EOH, I think it becomes very difficult to model a business which has got almost uncertain cash flows. So the cash flows of this business have become very unpredictable. You don't know what next is going to come from
clattering out the cupboard.
From the cupboard, and at the same time, the question is what happens next in terms of future transactions or future contracts that they have with suppliers and with other government entities or whoever. So I think a lot of people out there asking themselves questions whether or not they still want to do business with EH, and I think it becomes very difficult to model any future cash flows going forward.
Yeah, Gerbrand, do you agree? And also, would you stay away? If that's the case, because as you say, it's not just your reputation in the market. You know, people who do business will see all this stuff happening and think, oh, I'm not sure I want to have EOH be my IT partner in certain respects.
Yeah, I think we share similar views on that. So I think the whole business model, if you in that specific sector, you can be subsidized by anyone out there. And if you're like a person in public sector and you must dish out a contract, you certainly don't want your name to be tainted by somebody that's been in the media of late. So we're very scared of that. I think that reputational damage in that specific sector is a huge thing. So we've been avoiding it for quite some time.
Okay, well, let's see, I guess, what happens. There's a few questions on resources shares, and the first one is, 3 years ago, Anglo American were trading at around 112 Rand a share. Today, they're over 370 Rand. Given this, are they worth buying and holding for the next 3 years, or have I missed the opportunity? Gerbrand.
We're selling every day at the moment. So we think you've missed the opportunity. It was 50 Rand a share somewhere around 3.5 years back. Nobody wanted to touch it. It's almost like Aspen today. But similar problems.
Yeah, I mean, it was Anglo American, Kumba, Glencore.
Some of the guys did rights issues. Now, today, everybody wants to own these. And the newest hottest topic is platinum shares. And nobody's talking about them yet. They will in a year's time.
Questions, so we'll get to
they
that
must first go up 300%, and people will start chatting about them. But, yeah, if you look at a price to book, I think Anglo is trading at 1.5 or 1.7, which is probably their 10-year average, or they're actually above their 10-year average. We're happy to take some profits there. I'm not saying I own zero at the moment, but we have probably sold two-thirds of what we own already.
Paul, how about you? I mean, do you have to be quite disciplined as an investor in commodity shares? You've got to know that you've got to sell and you've got to buy at certain times, and you can't just buy these things and then put them away and say, oh, it's a blue chip company, therefore I don't need to look at it for the next 10 years.
Well, true. But I think if we go back to the time period in which Vio is referring to, I think there were a lot of structural changes that happened at Anglo American. I think we had change in management. We had a change in terms of the assets in which they really wanted to focus on. And hence, I think they really chiseled the shape and makeshift of those and structure of those businesses, and hence I think now you're really beginning to see the results of that hard work. He's obviously been a visionary and decided to buy them then, but I think at this point in time, you know, you're beginning to see a lot of other debt coming off. You're seeing certain key you know, businesses beginning to perform. Kumba Iron Ore, which is one of Anglo's biggest you know, dividend payers and you know, profitable entities, was also on the chopping block at that particular point in time.
Yeah.
But if you look at how,
definitely,
if you look at how that business has performed in the last 3.5 years, it's been a totally different story.
Is that not in the share price though? So,
yeah, the one thing that's probably not in the share price, that and it can go up for another 3 years, is that none of the miners has gone crazy on investing into new minefields again. So that's probably a positive that you can put into the positive block on the resources at the moment. Not the same as 2008, where everybody was piling billions and billions of dollars into new projects.
Yeah,
they haven't done it. I think they've learned previously, so it might continue longer. But I think the easy money has probably been made.
Okay. Got to leave it there for the moment. If you'd like to send questions, please do SMS us 41392 or email stockwatch@bbtv.co.za. We'll be back shortly. Welcome back. Let's have a look at what's happening to U.S. markets this evening. The Nasdaq has been particularly strong, and there it is heading towards a 2% gain on the day. There's been some M&A activity. Nvidia, which is a chip maker, has bought an Israeli company called Mellanox Technologies. That seems to have ignited excitement. The S&P up 1.25%. The Dow Jones trailing there up 0.6%. And across the Atlantic, you had the FTSE 100 gaining 0.4% today, and the CAC and the DAX both rallying quite nicely. We closed about 0.25% higher. And still with me in studio are Gerbrand Smith from NEFG and Paul Chakaduka from GT247.com. Just a quick comment on the U.S. markets, on the Nasdaq being all jolly and gung-ho this evening. Do we take anything from that?
Honestly, yes, because I think if you've seen what we, in the last 2 weeks or 3 weeks, we've seen literally around information on a lot of the U.S. markets, and we started seeing those markets coming lower. I think maybe this is a short-term bounce, whereas even if you look at Dow and S&P, a lot of them were bouncing off the 200-day moving average, and maybe this is a short interim bounce, and again, it now depends on what the Americans and the Chinese do in terms of trade deals or the lack of. I think the you can't really read into this move on one day.
Yeah. I mean, so do you think maybe this is going to suck too many people in and then spit them out again? Or could this be the start of a new leg higher?
Potentially. Again, look, I think a key level on the S&P 500 is that 2,800 mark. If you get through that, which I think we're about 25 points away from, then maybe you know, we can talk of moves higher. But for now, I still think we could still be in a downward trend.
Yeah. We were talking about Anglo American, and Kumba, you were saying, was one of the assets that thankfully they held on to. Well, they couldn't find a buyer at the time, and then it worked out to the best for them. And there's a question asking what the panel's view is on Kumba in terms of demand. Also, the Brazil tailings dam and the exchange rates. Brazil tailings dam disaster, I guess they're referring to Vale, which has been a real catastrophe, another catastrophe for the company. And then there's also a question on both platinum, major platinum stocks, Implats and Anglo Platinum is not a good short at the 770 level. Okay, so first, starting off with Kumba, so given what's happened to Vale, given what's happened to demand, and then also rand-dollar exchange rate, has Kumba peaked, or do you think that there's more to be had? Gerbrand.
Yeah, it's a difficult one. I mean, we didn't think it was one of the commodities to own over the last few years, and it was probably the star performer. It just shows you we know nothing.
From 20 Rand a share. Hopefully a little bit more than nothing, otherwise we're not having you back on the phone.
From 20 Rand a share to 371. I think it's been amazing, right? We all thought there's going to be an overcapacity with all the supply that came online with iron ore producers over time. China is still gulping it up. Vale is probably a short-term positive for the likes of Kumba, because there will be less supply from themselves, probably more from our side. From Kumba's side, they had the transport problems with the railways, etc. That would probably be sorted out. So the next numbers, if the iron ore price holds where it's now, will be better. But yeah, it's not as cheap as it was three and a half years back.
But I mean, 3.5 years back, it's almost unfair because that really was the bottom. You know, the bottom had fallen out of the share price, and the market was pricing it for bankruptcy, essentially, which is unrealistic as well.
Yeah, certainly. But still, if you look at what the iron ore producers actually do make still on business, I think Kumar runs at a 35 or something profit margin, which is just too high for a resource on the long term.
Yeah.
So it should probably
49%, I remember, at the peak.
Yeah, you should be some equilibrium, probably a bit lower. At the moment, there's a few things holding up the price nicely of iron ore. You might have another year or two of good returns.
Paul, your thoughts?
Well, I think Hebron's summed it up nicely. I think they've really had a nice, strong run. They've also been able to really benefit from the uptick in underlying iron ore prices. And at the same time, I think they've secured very good markets in which they're able to produce very good grade iron ore. And these guys are just gobbling it up. My question, to anyone in the market is, are we going to see another infrastructure development or spend like in the market, like in America or in Europe? There's a big demand for infrastructure development in those two markets, because if you look at the infrastructure in those two markets, they're nowhere close to what you've got in China. If you look at the motorways or highways that you've got in China, they are really up there, and they're building motorways each and every year.
Yeah, although you could argue that there's motorways to nowhere. I mean, there's all these ghost cities in China, things that are catastrophically useless, really.
True. But America needs good highways at the moment, with a lot of their infrastructure is crumbling. And if they are going to make themselves a force to reckon with.
Or do you mean make America great again?
Force to reckon with, then they definitely need to invest not only in the war, but in other infrastructure.
Okay, well, what about platinum? So the question is, there's two questions. The view on Implats, I'm not sure if it's a long or short view, but the question on Amplats is it not a good short at the 770 level? I have to confess, being a little bit out of touch with things, I hadn't looked at a chart of Amplats for a while until a couple of days ago, and then was actually stunned at how well it had done. I didn't really expect such an incredible performance.
Otherwise, I'm currently selling at the moment.
I
won't short it because I think the markets can push it higher. The platinum as commodity hasn't gone up yet. It's just you can substitute palladium's use for platinum. So we think platinum can still go up, and if palladium stays at the same place, you probably got some more upside in the platinum place. There was no new investment for quite some time in the platinum sector. We now have supply taken off market over some time, over a 10 or a 15-year period. If demand gets back to what it used to be, then you still probably sit with a shortage. So maybe I struggle to short stuff that has serious momentum in the market. They got momentum still. Do I think it's fully priced? I think so. 770, it used to be 200 rand just the other day.
That is one phenomenal turnaround.
Chris Griffith did the right stuff when he took over the helm there. Yeah. He actually moved from Kumba there a few years back at the bottom. They closed the unprofitable businesses. They kept the Mogalakwena mine, which is probably the best platinum mine in the world. It's doing well, but it is expensively priced at the moment.
Paul, do you think it's also dangerous to short something that has a lot of momentum behind it? Would you then buy another platinum counter, like an Implats or Northam or a Royal Bafokeng Platinum?
Northam I wouldn't look at. I think there's just too many variables in that business. Implats, I think we've also, again, I think if you look at all the platinum players, they've really benefited from this big move in palladium as opposed to no move in platinum. And again, a lot of these singles mineral producers are a lot of them are really geared. So any big move in underlying commodity prices, you know, makes them, you know, that much more profitable, and that's why I think these guys are really looking attractive. I wouldn't be buying Amplats Appia, and history has taught me, you know, you don't go against Anglo American Platinum or Kumba, because, you know, I think more than likely you're going to be burnt.
Okay. What about other sort of single commodities like Astral, chickens and maize? Well, two commodities.
Yeah.
Any thoughts there? I mean, we saw the results out from RCL Foods. Chicken is not a happy place to be invested in.
Look, it's priced for that as well. So Astral is probably the best one of the chicken producers out there over a long period of time. The maize price picked up considerably over the last 3-4 months, and that's why you saw Astral price come crumbling down. I think it was up 10% today at one stage. So it doesn't look expensive, sitting at a 4.7 PE, but the margins are going to be squeezed. If you look at what they're getting for their product, it's lower, the inputs are higher, so certainly difficult space, not good news coming out from them for the next 18 months.
Yeah. Unfortunately, there was a question asking where the team sits on copper, but I don't actually have time for that this evening, so I've got to get to stock picks. So we'll park that for tomorrow night, or maybe for the next time we have you both on the show. Paul, what would you be buying at the moment?
Nothing at the moment. I'll be shorting famous brands. I think
isn't it a bit late for that?
No, I think there's still some more a downside in the stock. You know, business has really been struggling in the last, I'll say, 3 to 4 years. They've done some acquisitions which aren't really, you know, haven't really, you know, yielded the results that they looking for.
This is a polite way of putting it.
Yeah, and then what we've started seeing now is we're seeing them trying to consolidate their business. But I think there's still more downside than famous brands. I think anytime soon they should have numbers coming out, and I don't think those numbers should be looking any good.
No, in fact, at least a 20% decline in earnings per share.
Okay.
So, on the money there, Gavrant, how about you? If you're not going to short something?
Yeah, let's go for Coronation Fund Managers. It's sitting at about 42, 43 rand a share. It's sitting at a hefty dividend yield, which might be cut if the earnings come down a little bit. But I think where we are in the markets, we're pretty optimistic on valuations over a five-year period going forward. We had terrible years on returns for customers over a five-year period. Everybody in South Africa had that. We're optimistic about the future, and if you think the markets are going up locally, probably not a better place to do it through a fund manager, which is low in capital assets and good on leverage on those.
Yeah, okay. Cameron Fall, we have to leave it there. Thanks very much for joining us this evening. Cameron Smith is from NEFG Fund Management, Paul Chakaduga from GT247.com, and we'll take more of your questions, and including the question on copper, tomorrow evening. So have a good night. Got to get to stock picks, so we'll park that for tomorrow night, or maybe for the next time we have you both on the show. Paul, what would you be buying at the moment?
Nothing at the moment. I'll be shorting famous brands. I think
isn't it a bit late for that?
No, I think there's still some more a downside in the stock. You know, business has really been struggling in the last, I'll say, 3 to 4 years. They've done some acquisitions which aren't really, you know, haven't really, you know, yielded the results that they're looking for.
This is a polite way of putting it.
Yeah, and then what we've started seeing now is we're seeing them trying to consolidate their business. But I think there's still more downside than famous brands. I think anytime soon they should have numbers coming out, and I don't think those numbers should be looking any good.
No, in fact, at least a 20% decline in earnings per share.
Okay.
So, on the money there, Gavrant, how about you? If you're not going to short something?
Yeah, let's go for Coronation Fund Managers. It's sitting at about 42, 43 rand a share. It's sitting at a hefty dividend yield, which might be cut if the earnings come down a little bit. But I think where we are in the markets, we're pretty optimistic on valuations over a five-year period going forward. We had terrible years on returns for customers over a five-year period. Everybody in South Africa had that. We're optimistic about the future, and if you think the markets are going up locally, probably not a better play to do it through a fund manager, which is low in capital assets and good on leverage on those.
Yeah, okay. Gerbrand Fall, we have to leave it there. Thanks very much for joining us this evening. Gerbrand Smit is from NEFG Fund Management, Paul Chakaduga from GT247.com, and we'll take more of your questions, including the question on copper, tomorrow evening. So have a good night.